Good evening, Truth Seekers. Mike Malloy here on the Nova M Radio Network. Thanks for tuning in. Hang out with us for a while tonight. We have Madness. We have Dancing Monkeys and Insanity tonight. And matter of fact, joining us next hour to add a little balance to the program will be Symbol Man from TakeBackTheMedia.com. We're going to chat with him for a few minutes, give a little follow-up to our interview with Dana Siegelman last night. He interviewed Don Siegelman in 2004 after the Republicans stole the governorship from him and a couple of years before they illegally imprisoned him. So stick around for that, okay? The couple of items here that just piqued my curiosity. Oh, yeah, and too much cappuccino Perino tonight, too. We have some of her bat squeeze verbal garbage doublespeak working overtime to explain the retraction she demanded from the New York Times about how many people in the White House knew about and tried to deep six the tapes, the torture tapes, that may have been burned up today. We'll talk about that in a second. First of all, the Magna Carta. Yeah, that Magna Carta, the one that bore the seal of, or bears the seal of King Edward I and dated 1297. A little bit of history, you know this, I know, because you are a very intelligent audience. The Magna Carta came into existence when English lords, or what were they, barons, whatever, when they demanded that King John put his seal on a list of protections that the barons, that the landowners were demanding, most of the demands found their way into our Bill of Rights, the first 10 amendments to the U.S. Constitution. That was back in 1215. And King John signed it, but didn't do anything. Sounds like George Bush. Apparently King John included a signing statement that says, okay, I'll sign this, but screw you. What do you mean? I have to enter into your home only with a warrant. Are you out of your mind? I'm the king. Anyway, for the next 80 years, the document was amended. It's just like it is now. 700 years ago, and it's just like it is now, right? Until finally, right around the turn of the 13th century, 1297, it was turned into law. The document that was sold today is dated 1297 and bearing the seal of King Edward I, who was a successor of King John. It is one, according to what I have here, it's one of 17 known copies of this historic document that defined human rights as the foundation for liberty and democracy, and something that the Bush crime family would just as soon had never happened, this terrible document. There are only two of these copies. There are 17 of them. Only two exist outside of the UK. The other is in Australia. Anyway, it was auctioned yesterday for $21.3 million by Sotheby's, the auction house, and it was bought by the Carlyle Group. Jesus God, the Carlyle Group bought it. Their buyer, David Rubenstein, put in the winning bid, Arguably, this is the most important document in the world, the birth certificate of freedom for the common man, although it wasn't designed for the common man when it was first presented to the King of England, but became that. Now, prior to being bought by the Carlyle Group, and you know about the Carlyle Group, I know you do. I like the way it's identified by the Associated Press, the Carlyle Group. The Carlyle Group is called a private equity firm. Yeah, that'll get it. That's a pretty good definition. Prior to the Carlyle Group buying it yesterday, the document was owned by the Perot Foundation. That was H. Ross Perot's foundation. And he had owned it. It had been on exhibit at Sotheby's for the past 11 days. I don't know where in the hell it was when Ross owned it. It's a document. It's a parchment. It talks about, here's what you do. You just take this document, form a government, and it'll work. That's all you have to do. But I'll tell you what, this NAFTA, that sound you hear is a sucking sound, is jobs being sucked out of America, going to Mexico. Remember Ross Perot? Wasn't he cute? Just like a little attack, a chihuahua, wasn't he? He just, hey, now we got the Magna Carta here. It'll work. Jesus. Carlyle Group owns it. The Carlyle Group, an organization arguably is the antithesis of freedom and justice and dignity and liberty and morality and ethical behavior. They own it now. What are they going to do with it? Dick Cheney is going to sit back on his large ass and throw darts at it? Let me see if I can hit the word magna. Well, the word magna is not there. Let me see if I can hit it anyway. And the fire today. How about that fire? All this talk about tapes, videotapes. Easy enough taken care of. Set the goddamn place on fire. That's all you have to do. Jesus, somebody give me a match. You know, the mob does this all the time. You got a restaurant? You want to collect on the insurance? Burn the son of a bitch down. Bruce writes, in Dick Cheney's ceremonial office caught fire today. The minions forgot to put the lid back over the hellmouth after the daily human sacrifice and sulfur and brimstone set the carpet on fire. Well, that's one good explanation. The other one is Dana Perino's. It was caused by a short in an electrical outlet. Electrical outlet where? In Cheney's chest? According to the Associated Press, thick smoke billowed from a fire today in Vice President Dick Cheney's suite of offices in the Eisenhower Executive Office Building. Cheney's office was damaged by smoke and water from fire hoses. The adjacent office of the Vice President's political director, old Amy Whitelaw, was heavily damaged by fire. Authorities say that's where the incriminating evidence was placed, evidence that could have sent Dick Cheney to prison for the rest of his life, which may only be 6-7 months. No, I added that last part. White House Press Secretary Dana Perino said the blaze appears to have started an electrical closet and a telephone bank. The building was reopened this afternoon, and Cheney walked through to see the damage. Oh, good. That's gone. Yeah, those rotten sons of bitches on the Judiciary Committee will never get that. Bastards. What else is burned up? Did they burn up the Magna Carta? Oh, it's not here. Who wrote this? Kent. There was a fire in Cheney's office building this morning. Let me guess. Some records were unfortunately destroyed. Yeah, I'll bet there were. And Greg writes in, Mike, the Don's ceremonial office caught fire today. Dana Perino has already given the sleepy public the easiest possible explanation. It's an electrical fire. The Bush crime family has reached the point where they don't even have to present the reasons for an office's redecoration. They just torch it. They destroy countries. They wait for, like Iraq. They wait for cultures to decay, like New Orleans. They set up systems to fail, like our schools, Social Security, and then force someone to recognize and stop it. If the public protests, the Bush crime family can still count on mainstream Democrats to lay low. So, Mike, with your Italian background, could you please tell your audience what positions the Bush crime family would fill if they were a little less deadly and more traditional, Cosa Nostra? Also, did Al Capone have anyone like Dana Perino? Greg in Des Moines, and then he has something here about Joe Lieberman that I just can't say on the air. Ooh, God, you're Greg, that's awful. Did Al Capone have anyone like Dana Perino? I don't think so, but with my Italian background, what positions the Bush crime family would fill if they were a little less deadly and more traditional Cosa Nostra? Most of them would be gophers. They would be the guys that would run around. They would get in their SUVs, their black SUVs with the tinted windows, and they would go around and pick up the VIG on whatever loans they had out. They would go around and pick up the protection money, and then they would come back to the social club and sit on their asses all day and drink really crappy Chianti and eat sardine sandwiches. That's what they would do. The Bush crime family is not full of intellectual geniuses who are steeped in the methodology of things. What am I trying to say? I don't know. I got lost in the sentence. They're a bunch of thugs and punks. They're not leaders. They're gophers.
Hey, Dick, come here.
Yeah?
I want you to go down to... that friend of ours, you know what I'm talking about?
Yeah.
I want you to go down there and, collect the money he owes us, all right?
Yeah.
You know what I mean, that guy.
Yeah.
All right, hurry up, all right? Hurry up, go get it, come back, all right?
Yeah.
That's about it. That's what they would do, Greg. Gophers. Punks. Waiting to be made men. And in a real Italian family, a mafia family, Italian, sorry, in a real mafioso mafia family, these punks would never be made anything. What's his name? Joe Pesci in Goodfellas. They would go into the room to get made, and somebody would put a bullet in the back of their heads because they're punks.
Alamo, right at the Bay of Cam. The loser was America, the winner was ourselves. So join right in and gloat about the War of 1812 in the White House. Burn, 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 and we're the ones that did it. They burn, 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 while the president ran and cried. It burn, 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 and things were very historical. And the Americans ran and cried like a bunch of little babies. Wah, 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 in the War of 1812.
My job is a decision-making job, and as a result, I make a lot of decisions, and it's important for me to have an opportunity to speak to you and others who would be listening, explain why I have made some of the decisions I have made, the basis on which I have made decisions, to explain the philosophy behind some of the decisions I have made.
It's Fredo. There he is. This is from Suzanne in North Miami, who writes, all right, the breaking news was on television, fire in the Eisenhower Executive Building. I heard it holds offices for Cheney and the White House staff. It also holds national security documents as well as intelligence documents. No water sprinklers working. Oh, and thank God Dick wasn't in the building at the time. My take on this, Mike, is that these SOBs destroyed buildings in New York City, so it's no big deal for them to destroy an historic building in D.C. They don't give a damn about history, and destruction is what they do. Dick always said during the Nixon administration that he wouldn't have surrendered the Watergate tapes. He would have destroyed them. Remember? Any questions? Yeah, I hate these people too, Suzanne writes. I can hear Dick now telling the D.C. fire chief to give a good reason for the fire and close the case. Or I'll shoot you in the goddamn face, do you understand? You know it's going to happen. And do you think the media will even question this as arson? I can't take this. I might have always been a little bit cynical of government, but not like this. And I've become a hater. which I do not like. Keep it lit, Mike. Suzanne. All right, Suzanne, get a grip. Come on now. Just get a grip. Thank you. From Greg Mitchell, blogging at thegregmitchellwriter.blogspot.com. Greg writes,
fire in Cheney's office. What was he burning? Or smoking? The fire is out of one of Vice President Cheney's offices across from the White House, though one had to be rescued off a fifth... Though no... What? Off a fifth floor ledge. Cheney was across the street at the time, which should lead to all kinds of swell quips about what sort of evidence he had just set on fire. Did he find a CIA torture tape that had not yet been destroyed? Private photos of Senator Larry Craig. The cable he sent to Blackwater ordering guards to shoot that New York Times dog in Baghdad? All memos related to Scooter Libby and Valerie Plame? Records of visits from Jeff Gannon? Copies of his $100,000 a year contract to serve as political consultant to Fox News? Or simply an electrical fire caused by an overload of activity by the shredding machines?
You guys are awfully cynical. I mean, you really are. We had a fire in the old executive office building today. And there's a little studio in there. I'm sure it's still there. I broadcast from there in 93 when the Clinton health care plan came out. WSB here in Atlanta sent me up there. And it was pretty cool. And during we had about an hour before the show started, so my producer and I were wandering down those halls. And it really is an old building. We came to the little office and went inside. And inside was a desk and some filing cabinets. And so, obviously, we opened them up. I mean, and started rifling through. And what we found, we had stumbled onto George Stephanopoulos' office at the time. Remember, before he became Judas Stephanopoulos, he was a Clinton advisor. And we opened up and we found letters from women to George. Nothing really good, no nude pictures or anything, but letters with pictures of women who were writing to George saying how cute he was and how much, oh, George, God, you just make me. And we read those until finally a guard came by and said,
what are you guys doing in here?
And we left. We had fun times. Fun times.
Hey, Truth Seekers, it's time for your humble and obedient servant, more of Mike Malloy.
I wonder when Kathy was going to start playing Christmas
Santa
music.
Claus, here comes Santa Claus, right down Santa
Claus. Oh, wait,
Claus,
that's not Christmas music. Get rid of that. Oh, my God. We're on the air tonight and tomorrow night and Friday night. And Friday night is the Malloy Christmas party. And we'll be off Monday night and Tuesday night, Christmas Eve and Christmas night, and then back Wednesday, Thursday, and Friday, okay? Regarding the fire in Cheney's office this morning, Mike writes in, it's most likely the result of the court ordering the White House visitor logs to be made public. Think about all those overnight visits from Jeff Gannon or Guckert or whatever, and all the religious leaders and energy company CEOs and Abramoff people. Scary stuff. Yeah, that fire was an accident like, I'm the Nazi Pope, and I really am not the Nazi Pope. When I saw that on CNN this morning, I thought, oh, my God, what is this? Oh, fun and frivolity. Where is it? The vice president? Oh, yeah. Okay. But I suffered a massive case of anticipation with that one. By the way, that's my word. I made it up. It is mine, but you can use it. The word is anticipation. This is from right here in the Metro Atlanta area. I got to share this with you. The other day, some neighbors complained up in Marietta, Georgia, in Cobb County, which is where all the Nazis and white racists and religious freaks live. And normal people, but I mean Marietta, Cobb County, I've said before, the people up there who threatened my life is why I got a permit to carry a weapon. 18 years ago. I mean, there's some real psychos that live in Cobb County. But anyway, it was reported on the news here in the Metro Atlanta area the other day that residents up there in some of the upscale subdivisions found their Christmas decorations had been trashed, you know, knocked over, broken up, really messed with. And they had some of the homeowners on bemoaning the fact that today's teenagers are just little punks. You know, how could you do this? It's Christmas decorations, for God's sake. You got to go out and destroy this. Well, there's an update on it. A football coach, I think he's a football coach, faces charges and awaits a court date after police said he led a group of students on a lewd Christmas prank in Marietta. Now, I didn't know about the lewd part. Police said John Hayes, who's 46, you ought to see a picture of him. He looks like Rush Limbaugh. Police said John Hayes, 46, loaded several middle schoolers into the back of his pickup truck and drove them around after dark as they damaged Christmas displays. But that's not all. The group even made several homeowners' displays X-rated, police said, including placing reindeer in sexual positions. Oh, my God. This guy's 40. You know how old middle schoolers are? How old are they? 12, 13, and 14? So he loads up a pickup truck full of these little buggers and takes a 46-year-old coach? A homeowner who did not want to be identified said he followed John Hayes' pickup truck and confronted him. The homeowner said, I said, are you crazy? And he said, it's just a bit of fun. Other adults in the neighborhood aren't laughing. Jennifer Shookman, one of the residents allegedly victimized by Hayes' little group, said, quote, we try as hard as we can to keep our kids on the straight and narrow, and then to find out it was a parent actually doing this, it makes you wonder. No, it doesn't make you wonder. It's where you live, sweetheart. You live in Cobb County, Georgia. That was a conscious decision on your part to live there. You live with nutballs, just absolute jerkwads. You live with white racist neo-Nazis, religious fanatics, all of whom have money, but reindeers? Cobb County Police said the coach was not being very cooperative. He wouldn't give the cops information on the kids. Cobb County Police Sergeant said, we tried to talk with him, but I believe he understands what he's done is wrong. Don't count on it, Sarge. One of the homeowners said Coach Hayes apologized and replaced their damaged property. Oh, God. Bad news. Dennis Kucinich's youngest brother was found dead at his home today. Perry Kucinich was found by another brother, Larry, at about 9 a.m. this morning. That's according to a spokesman for the Cuyahoga County Coroner's Office in Cleveland. No signs of foul play. Coroner said. Larry Kucinich had taken his brother shopping yesterday and then took him home, but couldn't get an answer when he tried calling him today, according to the coroner. Dennis Kucinich took a flight from Washington to Cleveland after learning of the death and was not immediately available for comment, according to his press secretary. The press secretary said he was very close to Perry and he's taking this very hard. What else do we have? On the front of the New York Times today, I guess you saw it. I would assume you saw it. The article about the co-conspirators in the White House who gave the advice on what to do with the torture tapes in violation of the law. I don't know. Did anyone notify Nancy Pelosi of this? Did anyone let her know that former Attorney General Alberto Gonzalez, David Addington, counsel to the Vice President Dick Cheney, and now his Chief of Staff, John Bellinger, senior lawyer at the National Security Council, and Harriet Myers, a Bush Supreme Court nominee, were all in the room deciding how and when to destroy the torture tapes? Now, I've got to assume that Chucklenuts was there, too. So there they all are, obstructing justice, suborning perjury, and defying court orders. Hey, Nancy, is that an impeachable offense? Nah, of course not. Talk about a spin cycle. I want you to listen here as Lava Lips tries to explain why the White House is playing cover your ass by asking the New York Times to correct the story it ran today about four White House legal advisors, that they had knowledge of the destruction of CIA torture tapes. See, I take it beyond the New York Times. They didn't have knowledge. They ordered it. Gonzo and Myers and Addington and Bellinger, senior lawyer at the National Security Council, for God's sake, is there any limit to what these ghouls will go to? No, as evidenced by Cheney setting his goddamn office on fire today. Reporter says, without the curse words, Dana, can you tell us why you decided to put out this statement this morning about the New York Times story, telling them they have to retract it? Why did you feel compelled to respond that way?
Well, the subhead of the newspaper indicated that the White House, well, it says the White House role was wider than it said, implying that I had either changed my story or I or somebody else at the White House had misled the public, and that is not true. And I have heard now from the New York Times that they will retract that headline, and they are going to run a correction tomorrow.
Oh. You're only saying the president had no this involvement, headline, therefore you're saying that, you know...
Well, if you want to defend the New York Times, then you might look at it that way. I look at it from anybody who... I think anyone who... And believe me, people that I've talked to, the reading of it, when I first looked at it, I felt that that was saying that I had misled the American public on this, and I have not. There is nothing I have said that has been contradictory.
Oh, Lava Lips! Oh, you little twit! Are you kidding?
As you would expect, the crack White House press corps then took doublespeak Dana to the woodshed over this one, asking her why she felt compelled to clear her name when the New York Times never mentioned her at all. And others have confirmed that Myers and Gonzo ordered the destruction of the tapes. Don't pay any attention to what someone's accused of. Pay attention to what they deny when they haven't been accused. Why is she taking it personally? The reporter says, why are you taking this personally? You're the one who's drawing the implication that it was implying you misled the public. Would you have been happy if the subhead had read, White House role was lighter than previously understood?
I have not. What it says is that I had changed my story, and I have not.
It doesn't say that.
That's how we. That's how
it
I took it, and I am not the only
story.
One.
Oh, it simply I'm says sorry. That the White House does not comment on this, but it goes
that is
on.
That's not what it says in this headline, Bill. And there was an editorial decision that led to this subheadline, because if they didn't want to make this point to try to say that the White House had misled the public, why would they put it in boldface above the fold and then it's not supported by any of the facts or the contradictory statements in the article?
It's very difficult to judge when you won't give us the facts.
I respect the fact that Attorney General Mukasey has asked for a preliminary inquiry that he's working with CIA General Counsel on, as well as General Hayden. Our White House counsel is supporting that.
Wow! Go, Dana! No outside oversight at all? Yeah, once again, the Bush crime family is going to investigate itself.
There's a fire in my office. Where's the fire extinguisher? Oh, good. It's outside on the ground. Good. All right. Let the son of a bitch burn, all right? Don't call the fire department until the fire has a 10-minute head start. Okay. Starting now.
Some of the beauty and love, and Venus was a name.
The Mike Malloy Show. You are now entering a flying monkey free zone.
10 before the hour. So the last one from, I think, is this the last one from Too Much Cappuccino Caprino? No, we have two left. Oh, good. So how exactly does the White House investigate itself? That's what's at stake here. One hopes it does a better job than it did on Plaingate or Torturegate or Abu Ghraib or Harkin or Halliburton theft in Iraq or naming garbage piles Superfund sites or Katrina aftermath or ignoring PDBs that could have been prevented 9/11 or the Chinese spy plane incident. I could go on here for hours. Listen to this back and forth from today. Let's recue it since we let's recue it and pot it down just a bit. Okay, listen to Perino and the press.
I need to ask why will you only allow the executive branch to investigate itself? Congress wants to investigate this, and the Attorney General is saying we're not going to cooperate.
That's a question. I understand the question, and I said to you yesterday that General Mukasey and General Hayden have asked everyone to cooperate in a preliminary inquiry. General Mukasey answered that question to members of Congress, I guess, 4 days ago, and I refer you to him for more.
Do you believe in checks and balances?
Of course we do.
When we can control them. Of course we do. Oh, no, don't say it, Malloy, don't say it. Okay, so when can we expect some outcome of this totally fair and unbiased executive branch investigation into executive branch illegal destruction of torture tapes? The reporter says, Dana, right after this story first broke, people within this administration did say privately that, in fact, Harriet Myers had told the CIA not to destroy the tapes, and that suggested that the White House, in fact, was saying, don't destroy. Now, this New York Times story is saying four people in the president or vice president inner circle actually talked to the CIA about it. So, that does suggest a wider role for everyone, right?
I am not accountable for all the anonymous sources that you turn up. I'm not. I am accountable. I speak for the president and for the White House. This says that I was misleading, and I was not.
It doesn't say you. It doesn't say you at all. And there were other people in the administration.
The White House did not comment. The only thing that I have said from this podium is regarding to the president and his recollection.
Why would it compromise the investigation for you to say one way or the other whether these officials knew of the tapes?
The question, some of the questions that you have that are legitimate questions that the public has and that the Attorney General and General Hayden has is who knew what when. And that is part of the inquiry, and so that's what they asked us not to comment on.
But why would that compromise the investigation? I mean, it's pretty straightforward. There's four people cited in the story, and to say whether they knew or whether they didn't is a very simple matter.
Look, I think that in any case, if I were to have said something to you two weeks ago when this first started, that then as more information is turned up, provides more information that makes it look like maybe I had misled you, then we would be having a very different conversation here. There's a good reason why I'm not commenting and why the White House is not commenting. And General Mukasey and General Hayden are doing a joint preliminary inquiry.
And you know what that reason is? Because you all are guilty as hell. And you know it, Dana. You're going to burn in hell, you little sweetheart. Did you know that? You're going to burn in the same hell as Dick Cheney. Aren't you worried about that? Well, I guess not. I guess not. You see, this is just like, isn't this just like the investigation into who leaked the name of Valerie Plame? Right. Well, we can't comment on that because it's an ongoing investigation. Well, it's being investigated, so we can't comment. Right? How long did that stretch out? 2 years? 3 years? Who cares? Doesn't make any difference. These rotten bastards. So now here we go again. Only this time, it's about who among these thugs ordered the destruction of the torture tapes that Dick Cheney and Elliot Abrams and Negroponte and Chertoff and Bush and the rest of these monstrous sons of bitches obviously had great fun watching and ordering. So now we have an executive branch investigation of the executive branch. Oh, that'll work. It always has, right? Ah, man. You notice I no longer say, God, you can't believe what happened today. Just when you think they can't go any further, they go further. And you know why I don't say that anymore? Because just when you think they can't go any further, they go further. It's incredible. So do you think in do you think before George W. Bush leaves office, there will be a resolution to any of these issues, especially this one that involves not high crimes and misdemeanors. What's above high crimes and misdemeanors? Major felonies? Violations of the oath of office? I mean, what's a high crime? Lying under oath, I guess. What's a misdemeanor as applied to the impeachment of criminals like Bush and Cheney? What is a misdemeanor? I have no idea. I don't know how those are defined. And don't send me anything from the Federalist Papers that defines it, because I'm just rhetorically speaking here. I don't know how high crimes or misdemeanors are defined. But would this sort of thing, 4, 5, 6 people sitting around figuring out a way to suborn future perjury, obstruct justice, destroy evidence, lie about it, and then, to add insult to injury, they send a little twit like Dana Perino out to take the slings and arrows of a obviously outraged crack White House press corps? Unbelievable, isn't it? Hey, stick around. I'm Mike Malloy. Our miles to go before we sleep. This is the Nova M Radio Network. Welcome back. It's about 6:30 past the hour. If you were tuned in last night, you heard us chat with Dana Siegelman, the wife of political prisoner and former Alabama governor, Democrat Don Siegelman, who is now in prison in a federal lockup because the Bush crime family wanted him there. We had mentioned last night that we might have a further discussion of this with a guy we've known for a long time, Symbol Man of TakeBackTheMedia.com. He interviewed Governor Siegelman in 2004 about the theft of the Alabama governorship by the Republican Party. And here's a description of how his victory was stolen. 3 years before Karl Rove made sure he was locked up and therefore unable to speak about the crime against him any further. This is from an interview with Symbol Man at TakeBackTheMedia.com. This is Don Siegelman, former Alabama governor and now political prisoner.
The chronology really is this. On Tuesday night, the election officials throughout the state had made their tabulations and had announced their results publicly. Don Siegelman had won the election. After midnight in one county, 6,700 votes were switched. By the way, when they changed the vote, when they recounted the votes in Baldwin County, it was odd that the only person who lost votes was me. It didn't affect a single other race. Not one vote changed that night from the original count to the final count based on the recount that was done after midnight, after the polling officials had gone. Now, one would expect that if there was some kind of computer glitch or some kind of computer programming error, that it might have affected more than one race. But it further raised suspicions about vote stealing when the votes came back and were certified, and the only person who lost votes was Don Sigelman, the Democrat, and the only person who gained votes was Bob Rally, the Republican.
That's Don Sigelman, in his own words, being interviewed of Symbol Man of TakeBackTheMedia.com, and he joins us now. Symbol Man, welcome to the program.
How you doing?
I'm doing fine. Long time no hear from you. What the hell? You don't call us anymore.
No. Yeah, last time was the Downing Street Memos.
I think so. It was a long time ago. First of all, let's get the amenities out of the way. How you doing? How's everything?
Oh, I'm doing good. We've had a baby since we met you or talked to you the last time.
Oh, really?
A little three-year-old now. Keeps me running.
Has it been that long?
Yeah.
Oh, my
yeah.
God. Well, it's good to hear from you, Symbol Man. Tell us a little bit more about your interview with Governor Sigelman.
You know, actually, the interview was conducted by my wife.
Yeah, I'm sorry. I didn't credit it the right way. It was.
No, that's fine. I don't think you knew that. I don't think that was apparent. She was the one that got this scoop. We were talking to Mark Crispin Miller, and we've been looking at what Larissa's been doing, Harper's, and all these people. All of a sudden, we realized that we had this footage, you know, from 2004, and we went back and we dug it up, and we thought, how can we best get this out? So we thought, well, Mark Crispin Miller. You know, this guy is a professor at NYU. He wrote Fooled Again.
Right.
For anybody who's read that book, he's got a new one out now, the Fooled Again paperback, which has more information. I mean, all the information you want to know about the election fraud in this country that's been taking place, he's got it right there.
Mm-hmm.
So we thought he's the guy to get this out to. So a couple days ago, we released this, and my God, this has gone out to, as of yesterday, 272 blogs. I've got what we've been calling Sigelman Speaks. Because, as you know, this guy is locked down.
Yeah.
Let him talk.
Yeah.
And what do you do with a political prisoner? You disappear him. That's the first thing they did. They ran this guy around from prison to prison. His family didn't know where he was. Lawyers didn't know. His lawyers did not know where this guy was. And this is Soviet Russia stuff.
His lawyers didn't know where he was?
His lawyers didn't even know where he was for, I think, 2 weeks.
Son of a bitch. And we are still to believe that this crime family, this Bush organization, should not be impeached, should be allowed to continue this. And now we're to the point with Governor Sigelman of literal, actual, really, no kidding, political prisoners.
Yeah. I mean, and then disappearing people almost to the point where you wonder, you know, what happens after this? Because they like to push it and see what they can get away with.
Yeah.
And, I mean, this whole election down there, this whole Riley stealing this election, literally, as the governor said, Riley and his buddies went in there. They kicked out the poll workers. There was no Democratic poll worker present, illegal.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
They went in there and they physically moved. Governor Sigelman was ahead by 19,000 votes.
Right.
And the interesting thing is, there's only 3,000 registered voters in Magnolia Springs where that alleged lightning bolt took place.
Uh-huh, and 6,000 votes changed?
Yeah. Physically, my wife and I sat down, and she does her numbers very, very well, and she figured out it's physically impossible for Riley to have won.
Yeah.
And we're thinking about doing a documentary on this.
I hope you do. I honestly hope you do. This is an astonishing story, and it's not gotten the kind of attention. I know Larissa Alexandrovna at Raw Story has worked on this extensively. I know that Harper's has worked on it. You have worked on it. New York Times had an editorial back in, September, October, that was a little bit weak as far as I'm concerned. But has any of this made mainstream media news, Michael?
Don Abrams, Is that his name, Dan?
Dan Abrams on MSNBC?
MSNBC. He'd been doing a series on this about a week ago. I think he did one of the last of the series, and he had Scott Hort from Harper's on there.
Uh-huh.
And they were talking about it. But what we're trying to do, folks, is we want you to write your congressman. We want you to write MSNBC, write CBS. 60 Minutes is supposed to be doing something on this. And according to Larissa and some other people, it sounds like Wiley somehow went after these guys and shut them down.
Mm-hmm. Governor, yeah. the Republican who stole the election.
Right.
Right.
And well, what I'm wondering about is, you know, are they afraid of doing another Dan Rather thing? And so they're backing off from something, or is pressure being applied to them by these corrupt, absolutely corrupt people? I lived there for 2 years in that section of Alabama.
Mm-hmm.
I've been in that courthouse many times.
Mm-hmm.
I've actually been removed from that courthouse, and I don't want to talk about that.
Okay.
But I share a certain kinship with him, let's put it that way, with the governor.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I feel like I was a political prisoner. I was before a judge. And I had my entire website printed out way before that judge,
mm-hmm.
who I believe was installed by the Christian, you know, coalition.
Sure.
Right-wing judges. They're completely corrupt down there. It's amazing.
How have the people of Alabama responded to the fact that their governor was denied? Well, hell, I should just ask how the people of America have responded to the fact that their elected president was denied the office and Bush was put in. So I realize this is kind of a dumbass question, or very naive. But Michael, how have the people of Alabama responded to what happened to Siegelman?
The people of Alabama are unhappy about this. You know, there's some very nice people down there. Like I said, I lived for 2 years down there, and they're not stupid. They know what's going on here.
Mm-hmm.
And this was a beloved man, and this man had been elected governor during that election by these people. This is the man they wanted in that office. And the problem is there's a couple of major newspapers down there, Birmingham and Mobile. They're not really talking about this guy anymore. They're not bringing him up. There's a virtual news blackout going on in this guy. And that's why we have to get out there with, like, your show and, you know, Take Back the Media, Larissa, Mark Crispin Miller, all these people are pushing this.
Hey, hold on, Michael. Hold on a second. I got to do a break here, and I want to pursue this a little bit further. We're talking with Symbol Man from TakeBackTheMedia.com, one of the few media outlets in this country that is acknowledging that we have a former governor who's now a political prisoner and trying to do something about it. Stay with us. I'm Mike Malloy. This is Nova M.
Mentioned yet tonight how much he hates these people. It's more Mike Malloy.
21 past the hour. We're talking with Symbol Man from TakeBackTheMedia.com about, among other things, his wife's interview with political prisoner and former governor of Alabama, Don Siegelman, and the activity around efforts to. To do what, Michael? To get Don Siegelman? It's my understanding he doesn't. His lawyers don't even have transcripts of the trial that occurred a year and a half ago.
Well, you know, there's one of the people that was transcribing that had died, so they sort of have an excuse, but not really because they're dragging their heels on this. It's fairly obvious. It's been 7 months. Where are they?
17 months, hasn't it?
17. He's been in for 7 months, I believe, at this point.
Oh, I see.
This is his first Christmas.
Mm-hmm.
And by the way, we'll post his address at Take Back the Media, so people can send him some well wishes. We'll also post his Christmas greeting to everyone from prison.
That's it's .com, right? TakeBackTheMedia.com.
.com. Yeah, we've been around since about 2000, as you remember.
Yeah.
We've made hundreds of, I mean, actions. You know, some of the stuff I didn't mention that we were doing in between the time that I talked to you last was we got into the environmental scene because, mm-hmm. because of Al Gore.
Right.
But we've been filming in West Virginia. We have gone out and filmed mountaintop removal.
Mm-hmm.
Where they're blowing the tops off mountains.
Yeah, which is now really, really, really legal.
Yeah, by one word.
Yeah, sure.
Bush administration changed one word, debris, and now they're actually, and we filmed this, they're mining the graves of these people. They're blowing up the mountains and mining graves. We've got that footage.
That's what I'm talking about.
I want to do a documentary about the corruption down there in Alabama and what happened with this man who was 19,000 votes ahead. Before they went in that room, locked that room down, and certified the votes the next day,
which was unlawful. It's unbelievable what and Karl Rove just got a job here in the past few months as a political writer at where, Newsweek?
It was Newsweek, I think. They're all getting jobs. If you notice, they're all leaving the business and getting jobs.
Yeah.
Consultants when they should all be in prison.
And isn't it wonderful that corporate America, these filthy pigs that John Edwards is railing against now, corporate America is willing to provide a nesting place for these snakes once they leave the Bush crime family. This is unbelievable stuff, Michael. I wonder sometimes what in the hell I did to be sent to hell like this.
You're an American.
Yeah, well...
This is a point in history where the corporations have taken over our country, pure and simple. And
right, what can people do on the Siegelman issue? Because, again, this is one of those not very well-publicized issues, and I have to be honest with you, other than mentioning it maybe 6, 7, 8 months ago, I haven't brought anything up until... it was suggested to me. Who suggested, Kathy, that we... my friend... Dan over in or Daryl over in Alabama, a graphic designer, started suggesting to me that I interview Dana. And why haven't we done that? So our good friend Daryl, who lives in Montgomery, kind of set this up. He's the one that made the initial contacts for me. And then once we got the updates on the story and found out what Larissa has been doing and what you've been doing, what Harper's been doing, and I guess what I said about Daryl kind of answers my question. He is an Alabamian and really liked Siegelman. So I'm just wondering, what can we do now? Go to your website and get the address and notify the Judiciary Committee that we demand...
John Conyers is the man to talk to, and I when I went and shot the Downing Street memos, they had that man stuck in the basement.
I remember.
Charge.
Yeah,
and
I remember.
Now, I'll tell you what, folks, he's not in the basement anymore.
That's right.
He can be in the big room with all the wood now. And he can cast that eyeball on people and say, look, Jack, I'm going to put your butt in jail if you don't talk to me. I would start with Riley's son, because there's been some noise about Riley's son shuttling large amounts of money by private aircraft from Abramoff in Washington to Riley to use in his campaign. While Siegelman was sitting there doing the just and righteous thing, running for office, Riley was pulling these shenanigans and also bringing in $1.2 million worth of Abramoff's money.
Man.
Remember, this is the Mississippi Indian casino tribe.
With Reed
playing this good cop, bad cop between him and Abramoff, shaking down these Indian casinos, and then taking that money and shooting it into the political system in Alabama. That's illegal.
It's incredible. And the only good that came out of that was that it deep-sixed Ralph Reed. Ralph Reed was attempting to be the lieutenant governor here in Georgia. And because I lived with a nest of rednecks here, he would have gotten it had not the exposure from the Abramoff trial tainted Ralph Reed. Hey, Simple Man, I got to leave it there. I hope people will go to your website, find out, get in touch with John Conyers. And for God's sake, please email me once in a while and let me know what's going on, and we'll put you on and we'll talk, okay?
I will. We're going to make a documentary about this. Please, folks, come to our site and help us out so we can get the money to do that.
Sounds good.
I appreciate you today.
All right. Thanks, Simple Man.
Keep fighting them.
All right, man. Yeah, you too. Take care. TakeBackTheMedia.com. Please go there, see what they're doing. Stay with us. I'm Mike Malloy. This is Nova M.
He's a liberal with a microphone, and that makes him dangerous. It's more Mike Malloy.
When I'm tired and thinking cold, I hide in my music, forget the day.
It's about 25 before the hour. Here's one of the more sad or sadder stories of more sad of the Christmas season. This is from High Point, North Carolina. There was a Christmas program at Oak Hill Elementary School yesterday. And an argument erupted among some of the parents in the audience. I'm laughing so I don't cry. And it turned into physical violence. The fight began after witnesses said a father approached another student about pushing his daughter on stage during the Christmas program. And then three mothers began yelling obscenities, throwing chairs, and punching each other as other parents tried to break up the fight, which lasted for around 10 minutes. The principal said she had to stop the program and asked the parents to be respectful of the children who were still on stage performing. Cops were called. By the time they arrived at the school, most of the people involved had fled or left. One parent claimed her daughter was hit in the head with a chair. No medical attention was required. An investigation is ongoing. Some of the parents involved in this have been banned from future activities at the school. Now, it was a public school, I think, Oak Hill Elementary. What do you want to bet that most of the people involved in this brouhaha was were good Christian church going Christians? Thanks to Cheryl who sent that to me. Oh my God! It's when you have a country's leadership like we have in this country now that feasts on violence against people who survive a hurricane in our own country. Violence against foreign people whose countries we invade. Violence against our returning veterans. Violence against our students. Violence against people in this country who need some help. Welfare, whatever. Violence against people who can't afford insurance. When you have that sort of a mindset, that's sort of an example. It becomes a mindset, and parents at a Christmas program at an elementary school start beating each other up. Well, Kathy, I keep telling you we ought to just sell the house and move up into the mountains and just homeschool the kid. Oh, God. Email here from Bruce. Did you know that the China Investment Corporation, that is that country's state-owned investment firm, probably one of the largest, if not the largest, in that country, late today agreed to invest $5 billion in the number two U.S. investment bank, Morgan Stanley, in order to bail their ass out? They bought 10% of Morgan Stanley for $5 billion. Now, as Bruce points out, that's not as good a deal as Abu Dhabi got when they bought into Citigroup. But so here it is. It's at ChinaDaily.com if you want to check it out. Morgan Stanley. Now, is it which one was the one I saw on television the other night? Was it Morgan? It wasn't Morgan Stanley. Who was it? One of the big investment firms. That means one of the big financial companies in New York that screw people left and right and do it legally and do it in such a way that the people who get screwed have a smile on their face and say, thank you, may I have more. But they're handing out, what did I read? The bonuses this Christmas are in the billions to the screwers. The screwees have no idea what happened, but the people are getting these huge bonuses. I guess it wasn't Morgan Stanley. Now, also today, Morgan Stanley reported a larger than expected loss in the fourth quarter. A $9.4 billion write-down because of its dabbling in the subprime and other mortgage-related investments. Now, that was a scam worked up by the big investment houses to screw the American public even worse. Coming up with things like adjustable rate mortgages, where you start out at 7% and then it balloons in 3 years to 14 or 15%. I mean, just and you know, I get so tired of these right wing sons of bitches on radio and television saying, "Well, the consumer should have known." How is the consumer to know when the person selling them the loan or setting them up for the loan talks gobbledygook, and you ask a straightforward question, you don't get an answer? And it was all predicated on Bush's ownership society. Hey, we want everybody to be homeowners in America, at least until 09 when I'm out of here. Screw it then. I don't care. Homeowners? I know very few homeowners. I know a lot of people that are paying off a mortgage, but I know very few. I know two or three, I guess. So the China Investment Corporation, the Chinese, remember back in the 80s when the Japanese were buying everything and people in this country were just going wild, like, you know, Reagan had brought our indebtedness up to $2 or $3 trillion, and for the entire history of this republic, it had never reached $1 trillion until Reagan got in office, and I think it only took him a couple, 3 years, and the debt was massive, and the people buying the debt were the Japanese. Now it's the Chinese. And the difference is, you know, we beat the Japanese pretty severely in World War II and nuked them a couple of times, but the Chinese, to whom we are now selling our huge investment banks, the Chinese really want to see, what was it that Orwell said? If you want to see a picture of the future, imagine a face with a boot on it. This is the Chinese are vile. Oh, now I'm going to be accused of something. Frankly, I don't care. They are. They're dishonest. They're liars. They flood global markets with poison and junk. They are soon to become the number one polluter, offsetting the United States. I mean, that's been our position for so long. Now, don't send me emails telling me I'm a racist thug because I don't like the Chinese. I don't like anything about the Chinese. Now, when I say that, I'm referring to the Chinese policies, the government policies, and the fact that there are no restraints on what they do. You have cough syrup that requires something that's red. What do we got that's red? Here's some rat poison. Okay, throw that in. Well, won't it kill people? Maybe a couple, but it doesn't matter. So the Chinese Investment Corporation is now a partner with Morgan Stanley, the number two U.S. investment bank. It doesn't mean a thing, does it? The Senate yesterday approved a $70 billion expenditure to continue funding the occupation of Iraq. Now remember, there were earlier promises made by the Democratic leaders in the Senate to set a timetable for withdrawal from the region before it would give the White House another blank check. Guess what? Maya Schwenner, reporting at Truthout, writes, the funds were attached to an omnibus spending bill to finance 11 government departments, making passage of the bill in the form the president would sign an urgent priority for many senators who said they would like to go home for the holidays. $31 billion for Afghanistan operations, over $10 billion of which can be used for body armor and so-called force protection in Iraq. Now, when that sum was raised to $70 billion in the Senate, it was also expanded to state that all monies could be used for either Iraq or Afghanistan. The Senate amendment... the Senate amendment that got this got the $70 billion was sponsored by Republican Minority Leader Mitch McConnell and Senator Joe Lieberman. So once again, the Democratic leadership in the Senate has just collapsed, absolutely collapsed. Remember when we thought 2007 was going to be the year that we changed course in Iraq? And now, if the House goes along with this, although the House, the representatives will probably scream a little bit louder and longer than the senators did, but if the House goes along with it, it'll be two blank checks that this Democratic-controlled Senate and House, two blank checks for murder and mayhem and war and destruction that the Democrats have given George Bush. And what did George Bush say? You send me the bill I want. Send me the bill I want, or I'll come out here and talk about how you're not supporting the troops. So send me the bill I want. I want money. I want lots of money. I want money spent in Iraq. Go get the bill. So what does Harry Reid do? Yes, Mr. President. Yes, I'll go get you the bill. Yes, sir.
Mentioned early on that I recognize there are hurdles and we're going to achieve those hurdles. There's no doubt in my mind we will.
Barry writes in, he says that elementary school fight story, the Christmas thing, reminds me of Passover Seder in my family growing up. I wish I were kidding. Every Seder we've been to has been rather calm, hasn't it? It gets a little crazy after a while because our Jewish friends are a little crazy, but especially when they leave the door open for Isaiah. Is it Isaiah? Who do they leave the door open for?
Eliyahu.
I can see Barry and his family throwing the Mogan David at each other, or the bitter herbs, or that nasty, nasty...
Haraset.
Gefilte fish, huh?
Haraset, isn't it?
I have no idea what you're talking about, but that's all right. What else we got? I know we have some people who are holding on here, so let's do a couple of phone calls real quick. And if you'd like to join us, the number is 800-989-1480. We're going to focus on phone calls during the final hour of the program after the break. I just have one more thing coming up after the top of the hour, and that's about the Pentagon report on the drop in Iraq violence. Oh, God. Anyway, Deborah is calling from Los Angeles, listening on Sirius Satellite Radio. Hey, Deborah.
Oh, hi, Michael.
Hi.
Hi. I was just listening to you before when you were talking about this mindset of violence that we have.
Yeah.
Right now, and I'm trying to do my best to change it by changing words that I use, even if it's one word at a time. So a couple of them that I come up with when I teach and I go into a room to substitute, instead of making demands on the kids, I use the word request. Enough of this on demand.
Uh-huh.
I think the whole thing kind of filters down to the violence. And then the other thing is, we're not we the corporation. We're we the people. So I think if we keep reminding people about that, maybe things will sink in a little bit. I don't know.
Yeah, well, you're right about changing language. You know, I wish I could clean mine up. I wish I could contain. You know, I have friends who meditate, who are Buddhists, who are psychotherapists, on and on and on, and they keep saying, you know, you're going to have to at some point, Malloy, remove yourself from this. And my answer to that is no, because if I did, I'd go out of my skull. I realize that in a very certain way, I'm part of the problem, not the solution, because of the ranting and screaming. And
I really do.
I really do. there are ways to approach what's going on in this country that are a hell of a lot more productive and results-oriented than what I do. But on the other hand, you've got to have an outlet. And I think a lot of people look at this program as you know, people connecting to that scream, like in the movie where the guy, the newscaster, said, "You got to stick your head out the window and say, I'm not going to take it anymore." So,
yeah.
You know, we serve some function here, but I wish I could be on the team that you're talking about, where you change language, and in changing language, sometimes you change behavior. You're right.
Right. Well, but you know what? You were the first person I listened to that calls the Bush crime family for what they are, and I was on my way to work one day, and I said, if he says this too many more times, they're going to take him off the air, and sure enough.
Well, no.
You're right. They are the crime family, and there's no way other way to call it.
Yeah.
They're criminals.
Yeah, it's just a shame.
It makes
me so angry. I wish that there was some way to override the anger. What I do personally, because I get a lot of people say we're concerned about your health, and I say, well, you don't need to be. You know, I walk a fast walking 4 miles a day, 6 days a week, and that really works off. In the summer, I swim until I can, you know, hardly breathe. You know, I do believe in physical exercise. I believe it's absolutely necessary, especially if you have a stressful job. And I'm not talking about physical stress. I'm talking about emotional or mental stress. So, you know, I do everything that I can to offset the anger that builds up. And when I come on this program, this is what I've found, that anger increases as I talk about this stuff. I wish there was some way that it could all go away and people like you and people like me and people like the listeners of this program could just sit down and say, look, that was a hell of a thing we just came through, but we came through it. Now, let's everybody relax and take a deep breath and you know.
I think we're getting there.
Okay.
All right. Thanks, Mike.
Thanks all for right. checking in, Deborah. Take care. Take care. Yeah, no, I believe that more and more lately. I'm aware of what I do on this program, and I'm also aware of what other liberal or progressive talk show hosts do on their programs. And, you know, I sometimes feel that there are programs that provide much more of a positive structure for change than this one, mine. It's one thing to scream and rant and rave, and it's something else again to say, well, here's what we need to do. I wish I could get there. I wish I could get there. I really do. I wish I could be like some unnamed liberal talk show hosts who seem to always just have an answer. Here's the solution. Here's what we need to do. Now, I do take notice that none of that stuff ever comes to fruition. They, you know, here's what we need to do. But then, hello, 2 years later, here's what we need to do. It's the same thing. So, I don't know. But I do. I am aware that this program sometimes just dissolves into a screaming, psychotic fit. And I also know a lot of people like it that way, too. Oh, well, we'll be back for the final hour. As soon as this break is over, stick around. Don't leave me now. I'm Mike Malloy. This is Nova M Radio.
midnight quiet. I have tried in my way to be free. Like a fish on a hook, like a knife from an old-fashioned book.
Welcome back. About 7 past the hour. Very quickly here, and then we're going to go to your phone calls. The Pentagon issued a report today. Violence in Iraq is at its lowest point in 2.5 years, the report said, but progress continues to be hampered by Iranian-supported militias? Yeah, that's what the Pentagon claimed yesterday. I'm sorry, not today. The report on the situation in Iraq, according to the Guardian Unlimited of the UK, also revealed high levels of corruption in the Iraqi police force and the Iraqi oil industry, an Iraqi army dogged by a lack of leadership, and high levels of desertion. The report said ethno-sectarian violence continues to be a concern. It criticized Iran for failing to honor a pledge made by President Mahmoud Ahmadinejad in September to cut off support to Shia militias in Iraq. The report said, quote, Tehran's support for Shia militant groups who attack coalition and Iraq forces remains a significant impediment toward progress to progress toward stabilization, end quote. Of course, Iran denies links to such groups. Just like Iran denied links to such groups, as they continue to deny a nuclear weapons program that all of our intelligence agencies agree with. So take the statement that Iran is supporting militia groups with an equal amount of salt or something. The report by the Pentagon covered the 3-month period September to November this year. It also claims Syria continues to provide sanctuary and support to Iraqi terrorists and foreign fighters. The report said Syria is estimated to be the entry point for 90% of all foreign terrorists known in Iraq. Well, if I were a smartass, I could say that Saudi Arabia and Kuwait are the entry points for 100% of all American military occupation forces, but I just don't feel like being a smartass. The report also says the Iraqi army is losing 17% of its troops each year. So what is that, about 6 years, and all the troops will be gone? It described the shortage of Iraqi army officers, as problematic and warned that it would take years to close the leadership gap. The report also says the Iraqi police are plagued with corruption and sectarianism. According to the report, several thousand personnel were fired due to criminal records, corruption, or other problems, and nearly 200 of the national police were dismissed for militia activity. Wait a minute, I thought they were Iranians. So that's the report. Drop in violence. Well, let's take a look. On Monday of this week, 2 U.S. soldiers, 47 Iraqis, were killed. 59 Iraqis wounded. A bomber tried to collapse a dam in northern Iraq that could have cost the lives of tens of thousands of people downriver had he succeeded. Another bomber in Balad Ruz caused over 24 casualties. A U.S. soldier died in a non-combat incident. Another soldier died during an event that is under investigation. In Balad Ruz, a suicide bike bomber killed 7 and wounded 24, including children, at a marketplace. A truck bomb left at the Mosul Dam killed 1 policeman and wounded 4 others. In Baghdad, 9 unidentified bodies were found dumped in several neighborhoods. A roadside bomb wounded 7, including 4 Iraqi soldiers. In Zafaraniya, a separate bomb killed 2 and wounded 6 on Palestine Street. 3 Iraqi soldiers were killed during security operations that included defusing 37 roadside bombs. Gunmen attacked a Bakuba market where they killed 3 neighborhood patrolmen and wounded 4 more. Elsewhere, an IED or gunman killed a judge in the Had Maziad area. Combined U.S. and Iraqi forces arrested 37 suspects. 2 more people were killed in separate shootings, and 2 others died in roadside bombs, and 6 more dumped bodies were discovered. 2 policemen near Baiji were killed and four council members wounded. An IED exploded near a U.S. patrol in Mosul. The troops then randomly fired on nearby civilians, killing one and wounding two others, including a woman. A local leader and his companion were gunned down in front of his home in Jalawa. Near Basra, gunmen dressed in military garb killed one civilian, wounded two others. A body was found in the Tharthar region. A body was found in Duluia. Mortars fell in Dali Abbas, killing one person and injuring four others. One Iraqi Coast Guard member was killed during a clash with smugglers near the Iranian coast. In Harunya, two policemen were injured during a roadside bombing. Police defused a bomb north of Ramadi. No casualties were reported. A suspected sniper was arrested in Karbala. Oh, what's the point? You can get all this by going to antiwar.com. So, the drop in violence, I don't know. I guess antiwar.com is just composed of liberal liars. Meanwhile, according to the Washington Post, and we know they always speak the truth, today's paper, Iraqis of all sectarian and ethnic groups believe that the U.S. military invasion is the primary root of the violent differences among them and see the departure of, quote, occupying forces, end quote, as the key to national reconciliation. That's according to focus groups conducted for the U.S. military last month. Now, according to a military analysis of the results, are you sitting down? Please sit down. Please sit down. Let me give it to you again. Iraqis of all sectarian and ethnic groups, everybody, Sunni, Shia, Kurds, I don't know who else is there, the Christians, the Jews, whoever's there, all of them believe the U.S. military invasion is the root of the trouble. Now, according to a military analysis of the results of these focus groups, this is good news. Why is it good news? Because the findings indicate that Iraqis hold some, quote, shared beliefs, quote, that may eventually allow them to surmount the divisions that have led to a civil war. Do you understand this? The U.S. military conducts focus groups all over the country. And the groups report, well, it's you sons of bitches who came to our country and ruined everything. It's your fault, the violence. So how does the U.S. military respond to that? Well, that's good news because all of a sudden the Iraqis have some shared beliefs. The shared beliefs are that we are the cause of all their troubles. So the U.S. military says, well, there's some shared beliefs and maybe they can build on that and form cohesion. What? Participants in these groups of men and women were interviewed in Ramadi, Najaf, Erbil, Abu Ghraib, and in Sunni and Shiite neighborhoods in Baghdad. The report is dated December 2007. The report notes that the Iraqi government has still made no significant progress toward its fundamental goal of national reconciliation. Well, I'll tell you what, boys, just keep our troops there and eventually they'll all come together. Now, in the focus groups, very few, if any, mention Saddam Hussein as a cause of their problems, which this report, conducted by the military, U.S. military, described as an important finding because it implies, according to the U.S. military, quote, that current strife in Iraq seems to have totally eclipsed any agonies or grievances many Iraqis would have incurred from the past regime, which lasted nearly four decades, as opposed to the current conflict, which has lasted for 5 years. Doesn't that sound like the U.S. military, the occupation forces, are exposing something about themselves? Did the censors not catch that? Few mention Saddam as a cause of their problem, which means the current strife in Iraq seems to have totally eclipsed any agonies or grievances that Iraqis would have incurred from the past regime, which lasted for four decades. We've been there 5 years. Son of a bitch.
I do what I am told. We came with the crusade.
evidence that Saddam Hussein was involved with September the 11th.
Welcome back. 21 past the hour. Let's go back to your phone calls here. Francisco is calling from Miami, listening on WIMZ. Francisco, welcome to the program.
Oh, hey, thanks, Mike. I am. It's the second time we talk. thanks.
Yeah. My pleasure. I'm glad you called.
Hey, I want to say one. Two things.
Okay.
About corporate America. That I just realized that this is a nation under a dollar, and justice for none.
We've arrived at that point. There is still justice, but it's got a price tag on it, and you have to have lots of money in order to get what feels like justice, but is not justice. It's really just having the way greased with dollar bills so you can escape your crimes. I do not believe that justice under the law or equality under the law exists in this country anymore. It's been eroded slowly, deliberately, and consciously over the past 20 years, and we're there. This effort or this ruling by the U.S. Supreme Court the other day that crack users are now to be treated like powder users where it concerns cocaine was hailed as some kind of some great progressive step forward. We have been locking people up in this country for the past 24 years unfairly based on a perceived difference between crack and powder cocaine. And that was a racist move as surely as God made little green apples, or somebody did, Darwin. I don't care who made them. But, you know, when you live through something like that in this country and for two decades, and you know damn good and well that crack and powder cocaine are exactly the same, but you also know that one, because it's cheaper, is used by people who are in a lower economic class, have less money, and, oh my goodness, that would be dark-skinned people, wouldn't it? Yes, it would. And that they are going to go to jail at a far higher rate than the light-skinned people who use powder. It's disgusting. So, you're absolutely right. I'm sorry, Francisco, I'm just going on and on here. But there is no justice in this country, and there hasn't been for a long time, unless you have money.
Oh, that's true. One more thing about the what's going on in Alabama, that political murder.
Yeah, that's what it is.
I got to say, just one thing about the Christians out there in Alabama. I just realized that. You know, there's one thing in the Bible that says, thou shalt not bring any false witness.
Bear false witness, right?
Bear false witness. Just realize what exactly just happened.
I know. It's vile what they've done to Don Siegelman. Not only is it vile, but it's a portent of what we all can face, political lockups in this country. And once again, it makes your point that there is no justice, there is no equality in front of the law. That statue of Lady Justice holding the scales of justice in her hands with a blindfold, that the scales are going to go where they go, has become just a joke. It's a perversion and a joke. I think about Jose Padilla. I think about the people from your neck of the woods, from Liberty City, those seven guys who were busted in charge that they're going to blow up the Sears Tower, for God's sake. And now one of them has been acquitted, and the government, and the other six was a mistrial, and the Bush crime family says they're going to try them again.
Oh.
Yeah, justice does not exist unless you are very, very white and have very, very lots of money. You got it made, right?
That's true.
All right, listen, hang in, Francisco. Thanks for checking in, man. Appreciate your call. Yeah. What? That's wrong? That's not wrong. It's not wrong to say that. It's not cynical. I hate this term, but I'll use it. Any person of color in this country knows that to be the truth. I'm not saying you have to like your black neighbors or your brown neighbors if you happen to be white. You know, you like and hang out with whoever you want to. You know, everybody has that right. All I'm talking about here is justice. All I'm talking about is no justice, no peace. Why don't people understand that? Why is it always a surprise to us to find out that the vast majority of males in the prison system in this country are dark-skinned, most of them with some sort of African background? Why is that a surprise? Why do people say, damn, really? It's not a surprise in those communities. But, you know, whites always seem like they don't quite understand what the hell is going on. I don't know. We'll be back after the break. I'm Mike Malloy.
And his king of his honor and his glory, the people would sing.
By glance at the headlines, just to kind of get a flavor for what's moving. Rarely read the stories. Best way to get the news is from objective sources. Most objective sources I have are people on my staff who tell me what's happening in the world.
Twenty-five before the hour, Edie sends me an email. Hi, Mike. I was glad to hear Dana Siegelman on your program last night. The entire episode reminds me of the Dreyfus Affair. To an innocent person, any prison must seem like Devil's Island. As you are aware, Dan Abrams did a segment about this case last week. Representative Arthur Davis, Democrat of Alabama, spoke on some of the details, and he is not giving up on Governor Siegelman. At the end of the segment, Dan Abrams said something I found interesting. He said, quote, "The days of the Justice Department operating under the radar of the mainstream media are over. You're on notice," end quote. Let's hope he meant it. Maybe Keith Olbermann, whose show precedes his, has been a good influence on him. From Edie. Yeah, I'm starting to get very interested in Dan Abrams' program, but he comes on just as I do, and I can't catch it. I can usually catch the first 6 minutes because we're still in news and commercial breaks. We don't come on the air until about 6:30 past the hour. But I like what Abrams is doing very much. And, yes, I think the real trailblazer at that network is Keith Olbermann. I know a lot of people believe that, what was his name, Kathy? The white-haired guy that used to be the liberal at MSNBC, and they canned him, Phil Donahue. I know a lot of people think Donahue broke the ice over there. Okay, you can make that argument. But I really believe that the catalyst... you got to keep in mind who Olbermann works for God's sake. He works for General Electric and Abrams, too. That's the corporate monster that owns MSNBC along with Microsoft and also owns NBC and CNBC. And, anything with NBC on it is owned by General Electric. So Olbermann and Abrams, and I know their senior producers or supervising producers, have to clear, not censor, but clear what they do. The closest I ever came to that was when I worked at WLS in Chicago that was owned by ABC. I've never had to worry about clearance where it concerned anything I've said on a program. I know a lot of people think that I got canned from Air America because of my anti-Zionist position, which is not true. It just isn't. Or my position on the 9/11 lies. Not true. I got fired from Air America because a psychopath took over their financial department and decided to get rid of some of their expense. And I happen to fit in that category. So there's no real conspiracy there. All of that to say that Dan Abrams and Keith Olbermann are really, really somehow should be acknowledged by, I don't know, by whom. I know their colleagues, a lot of people in the news business right now, I still have friends at CNN, are extremely envious of what these guys are doing, especially Olbermann. Would love to make the kinds of what Olbermann's so-called special comment or, you know, his editorial comments that he just unloads on these sons of bitches in the Bush crime family. In a way that most newscasters, and let's keep in mind, that's what Keith Olbermann is. He is a newscaster. There is not a lot of difference in his position within the within NBC, not a lot of difference between his position and who's the guy on NBC Nightly News? You know who I mean. Yeah, Brian Williams. Brian Williams is on the network. On the air network, and Keith is on the cable network, but their positions are pretty much the same. They are anchors, newscasters, interviewers, whatever you want to call them. But Olbermann's approach, of course, is different in the context of what he reports on, different from Brian Williams. But anyway, thanks, Edie. I appreciate you sending that in. And yes, I hope that Olbermann and now Abrams can somehow break out of the liberal ghetto on MSNBC and become even more mainstream. Wouldn't that be something? Back to your phone calls. Jamie is calling from Sacramento, listening on KSAC. Hey, Jamie, welcome to the program. Wait a minute. We'll get Jamie in a second here. There's Jamie in Sacramento. Hey, Jamie, welcome to the program.
Hey, Mike, how you doing?
I'm doing all right.
Well, I just want to make a couple of quick comments. You know,
sure.
When the guy said about, Revelation 2:10 says the devil cast them into prison. And you said a majority of the prison system is African American, so it's part of the prophecy. But the main thing I wanted to say is that we're in the most critical time in our history since the Civil War, and I think we're in a struggle for our democratic process at this point. And pretty much what it is the old guard, these are the good old boys from the South, goes back probably to the Confederacy, probably even further to when the Queen emptied out her dungeons. But what I'm saying, we're scrambling for survival here for our democratic process. But the other thing I want to say is the Democrats are pretty much a different side of the same coin as the Republicans.
Mm-hmm.
And basically what we probably need to do, and I think what we need to do, is cycle all of them out of office
mm-hmm.
and start over again. And I think we're going to have to work within the process because it's so corrupt. And so this is just what I feel, Mike. And,
well, I agree. I hope we've got the time left to do it. I hope we've got the time to cycle these people out. I hope we've got the time to either transform the Democratic Party or flush it, because right now it is worse than useless. It is worse than the Republican Party, and the reason it's worse, it has to do with know your enemy. A lot of my friends in the South who happen to be black have said, you know, they can appreciate white Southerners more than whites from other parts of the country because they always knew where they stood with white Southerners, and that is they didn't stand anywhere with white Southerners. White Southerners were pretty pretty straightforward in their bigotry and their racism, whereas when you travel around other parts of the country, it was hard to figure out.
Hard to tell, yeah.
Yeah, who was what. And the Democrats, that's the reason, the Democrats have gotten me to that point. I want to know my enemy. And my enemy is the Republican Party and every member of that corrupt organization. My enemy is not supposed to be my own people. You understand what I'm saying?
Mike, and that's such a small minority Southerners that are controlling everything here.
It is.
Do.
It is.
And, you know, as far, and another thing I want to touch on as far as experience, I think my niece with a few trusted advisors could do better than this present administration.
I hear that.
It doesn't take a brain scientist to do a better job than this.
I don't
believe in anything the Democrats are doing. I think it's going to have to be a homegrown process where we're going to have to recall some of these people that aren't doing their job. Mm. And another thing, you got to remember the anthrax situation. They're probably scared to death, and they're so insulated in there. They're probably scared to death to do anything. So I don't know what is exactly what's going on, but I know this. We're going, and as far as the economy, I mean, I have a feeling that the bottom's going to drop out. So, you know, just hold on to your shirt, because it's just becoming a global economy, and I think we're going to be left in the dirt. And I think, and you also have to remember the trilateral committee. These aren't corporations. These are people running these.
I know.
That's just a vehicle to do what they're doing with no face, even though they're an entity, pretty much. But these are people running these corporations. And most of them are these good old boys from the South. Or should I say good old bad boys from the South?
So we need
to just keep it up and try to recycle them out. We have to protect our ballot box, because that's the only thing we have left.
That's true. And it's under such attack, Jamie, so many places. Listen, pal, I got to move on. You made some great points. Thanks, Jamie. I appreciate you checking in, man. Take care. Marge is calling from, I don't know, someplace in Indiana. Hey, Marge, welcome to the program.
Hello there. How are you this evening?
I'm fair to partly cloudy. How are you?
Okay, we're hanging in there. You were just talking about Keith Olbermann. He was on this past week, I believe, with Bill Moyer on his journal.
Yeah, I heard about that. Didn't see it. Would have loved to. May get a chance to on the rebroadcast.
One of the things that he mentioned, and that I found rather fascinating, without actually saying it, he sort of hinted rather strongly that as long as he generated money for the station, mm-hmm. he could say pretty much what he wanted, carefully.
Well, there's truth to that. Broadcast organizations, as you know, they don't give a damn what the message is if it makes them money. And if it doesn't make them money because of... It doesn't make any difference what the reason is.
Mm-hmm.
So many so-called liberal or progressive outlets have had to struggle because they couldn't attract advertisers. And the reason they couldn't attract advertisers had nothing to do with the potential audience. The audience has always been there for liberals or progressives. It's because corporate America says, no, we're not going to give you money. So then that program on radio or TV looks like it's a failure. And the only thing that failed was corporate America not supporting it. Hold on, Marge. Let me put you on hold.
Yes, sir.
And I'll come back right after the break here. Stay with us, Truth Seekers. I'm Mike Malloy.
Made it to the curb if he were quicker. Go, Reds, go! But she backed it up and squashed him one more time. Grandma cried and cried at Grandpa's funeral. Not because we peeled him off the road. All the loot she got from his insurance went to pay the bar tab that he owed. Grandpa got run over by a beer truck coming out of Woody's Christmas Day. Grandma got a job out at the brewery. I never knew. Now it was long ago when it all began, back in Bethlehem.
10 before the hour, thanks to Ian Huff, our engineer, Billy Foster, our technical director, Chris in Minnesota, our senior correspondent, Catherine Bay, our executive producer, the usual crew of bandits for the program tonight. Back to Marge in Indiana. Marge, go ahead.
Hi there. Yeah, I think it was Frontline that did a story on the media that's been crying poor for the last how many years. But they mentioned specifically there was one paper in Florida, and I think it was somewhere in the Tampa-Fort Myer area. I don't remember the name.
Mm-hmm.
But they've been doing very nicely, thank you, and making a nice little profit. They weren't, you know, lining their pockets with gold, but they were making sufficient money to stay in business. Imagine that.
Yeah.
I wish I could remember the name, but anyhow.
You're not referring to the award-winning St. Petersburg Times, are you?
The which?
St. Pete Times. Now, they were talking about a liberal-oriented newspaper that was staying in business?
Well, I can't really tell you for sure. It's been a few months since I've seen the show, and I don't remember, truthfully. But I do remember it was in Florida, and it was in the Tampa area. And why I'm saying Fort Myers, is there another paper in Fort Myers, too?
I don't know. I do know about the St. Pete Times.
It could be, but, you know, I wouldn't swear to it.
Okay. Well, what else? You want to wish me a Merry Christmas? I got your card today. Or no, I got your card. When did we get it, Kathy? A couple of days ago.
Oh.
And I don't know if I sent you one or not. So
yeah,
I did.
I got the picture of Molly.
Oh well, we did send you one. Okay.
I love that. She looked at Santa Claus and was saying, "You're wearing a red suit and you got a white beard. But what is this with the free presents? Can I trust you?"
I know.
She's a smart kid.
She's going to be on the program Friday night during our Christmas show. I'm going to read the Night Before Christmas for her.
What's your schedule going to be next week for the holidays? You going to be on or off?
Oh, yeah. We're taking off Christmas Eve and Christmas night. And that's it. I think Peter Werby is going to substitute for me Christmas Eve. He's going to do a show on atheism. And then we'll be on Wednesday, Thursday, and Friday.
Very good. The thing that got me started today that I wanted to share with you, who was it? David Brancaccio.
Yeah.
I love his show.
He's good.
He's taken over for Phil Moyer on the Now.
Yeah,
but he had a recording of an interview with the late Kurt Vonnegut.
Mm-hmm.
And Vonnegut made the suggestion, and I just kind of like it. It struck me that whoever the new president is going to be, they need to have a new cabinet post.
Yeah.
The Secretary of the Future.
Secretary
so that
of
all
the
these
future.
Goofy ideas that they come up with need to be considered in the light of what it would do to our kids 20, 30, 50 years from now.
That's a good idea. That's a good
Don't
idea.
Don't you love it?
I like that. I like Dennis Kucinich's idea of the Department of Peace, too. Secretary of Peace. Yeah.
Yeah, I'll vote for that.
Yeah.
God.
No, just call me Mike.
Okay, Mike.
All right, Marge, Merry Christmas.
Merry Christmas to you and yours, and talk to you soon.
All right, take care. All right, take care. Where'd she go? Are you there? Where's Marge? Are you still there, Marge?
No.
Kathy hit the button too quick. All right, what were you going to say? Take care?
Take care and have a happy holiday, and don't eat too much. And Kathy, I got to send you that recipe for fudge. It's too late for Christmas, but I got to find it and send it to you. It's no fail fudge.
Well, she makes a pretty good fudge. Trust me, Marge. Hey, listen, thanks. Behave yourself. Take care.
I'm too old for anything else.
I know you are. I know you are. I've always said that about you. She's too old for anything else. I've always said that. Roger is calling from El Paso, Texas, listening on Sirius. Hey, Roger.
How are you doing, sir?
I'm doing
all right. I've never talked to you before. I'm a long-distance mover.
Uh-huh.
And the reason I called, Without satellite radio, I never would have heard it. Can you imagine if your show was on TV every day, what we could accomplish?
I don't know. You think we could accomplish something? Seriously?
Yes, I do, and I'll tell you why. As you're aware, 91% of the media is owned by right-wing fanatics.
That's,
You know, the Sean Hannitys, the Rush Limbaughs. And nobody tells the truth. And I turned your station on by accident. I hit the wrong button. And I've been listening ever since.
Well, I'm glad you hit the wrong button.
You know what else, Mike? I see the pathetic state of this country. I move people all over the country.
Mm-hmm.
What this vile, murderous, criminal regime has done to us. My income has gone down 70%. No big deal.
Yeah,
it's a big deal.
Yeah,
I move disabled vets out of the military every day with crutches. It makes me sick to my stomach.
Mm.
And I can imagine if you, a guy like you, and I listen to you every night because normally I shut down, you know, by about this time of night.
Mm.
And you're great. You tell the truth. I just wanted you to know that. You know.
Well, thanks, Roger. Those are very kind things to say, and I do appreciate it. And I hope you'll continue to tune in. Thanks a lot, Roger. Take care, man. Take care. Hey, we got time? No, we're just about, no, we don't have time. We could put Robert or Scott on or somebody else here, but guys, we're going to have to get you tomorrow. Well, thanks for hanging out tonight. For however long you did that, I do appreciate it. Is this Wednesday? This is Wednesday night, right? Okay. What do we got planned tomorrow? Just regular show.
I guess. Now, we had told everyone we were going to give away these more decks of cards on Friday.
I want to do it Friday, yeah. We'll have time.
It's going to be...
We'll have a jam-packed Christmas
boy.
Show. Yeah, we will.
Well, I guess it's appropriate we give away presents on our Christmas show.
There you go. That kind of makes sense, doesn't it? I don't mean to, you know, sound radical, but giving away little gifts on a Christmas show is, like, kind of cool, right? Plus, I understand we have a latest message from Pickles Bush. Huh?
I believe Pickles will be in the house.
Oh, my God. I'll see you tomorrow night, True Seekers. Take care. Take care. Please keep it lit. I'm Mike Malloy. This is Nova M Radio.